Good afternoon. So last time we talked about implementing locks that didn't do this busy waiting thing where we didn't just have this loop that was running when really we had no work to do. And what we did instead is we had some integration with the scheduler. We had some way of telling the scheduler, hey, I'm not doing anything useful, don't run me. And to make that work, we also needed to have the unlock operation be more complicated. Now it needs to tell the scheduler, hey, there might have been something that previously was paused because of this lock that needs to run now. And we saw the sort of implementation we started with was one where we had just an explicit list of waiting threads. So we had this add yourself to the list operation on the lock if the lock was already taken, and this unlock needed to remove something from the list and make it runnable. Then we looked at, well, mutexes don't let us do some things we wanted to do. So how can we expand what we can do to handle more situations? And we want something that's less specialized than like barriers, which barriers are nice, but they kind of have one specific pattern they're designed for. We want something that can handle all the sorts of situations. We want to have threads waiting for something. And we saw this solution with mutexes and conditioned variables. And as I mentioned, conditioned variable is not a great name. It like sounds like there's like a Boolean inside here, and there isn't. Conditioned variable represents a list of waiting threads. The name is because they should all be waiting for the same condition. And we have some operations on our conditioned variables to manipulate that list. So we have this wait operation, which adds ourselves the current thread to the list of waiting threads. And in the process, it temporarily unlocks a mutex, and then it relocks it later. And the idea is that if the condition might change, well, we'll make sure it only changes when that lock is held. So we don't have to worry about, what if I started waiting, but the condition had changed from false to true that I was waiting for? You know, that prevents that scenario because we have this simultaneous unlock and wait operation, rather than being two separate things. And then when we change the thing the threads are waiting for so they can actually run, we have some operations to remove them from that list and make them runnable. And since when they're waiting, they temporarily release their lock, the first thing they're going to do when they're runnable is try to get that lock back. But these two operations that make the threads wake up and try to get the lock are signal and broadcast. And broadcast wakes up every thread on our list, and signal chooses a thread and wakes that one up. And we said that we have what we call monitors, or what we get when we combine a lock, some shared data. We saw an example of just a Boolean as our shared data, like is something finished or not. We saw an example of just a queue as our shared data, just a list of items as our shared data. And we have some condition variables for things that are waiting on something about that shared data. So questions about things we covered last time? Okay, so we saw sort of our general monitor pattern. And I also mentioned, you know, that we often have these shortcuts when we're using monitors that, well, you know, so sometimes we have examples that use signal because we knew that only one thread needed to, you know, run after we change something. Like if we enqueued one item, well, only one thread can dequeue it. So we don't need to wake up multiple threads to handle that. But, you know, we could have used broadcast and it wouldn't have affected correctness because the threads need to double check the condition anyways. And similarly, we can broadcast or signal when nothing's changed, and that won't affect correctness. So if we're not sure if one of the threads is runnable, we can just try to have them check to see if they're runnable by having them wake up and get the lock, check the condition on the shared data. And similarly, we can have one conditioned variable that is used for multiple things. Yes, these are all things that won't affect correctness, but are gonna affect performance. So probably want to avoid them, but if we have a situation where it's like hard to have a conditioned variable for every possible condition, well, we can do the slower approach and just have wake up threads that are going to need to check and figure out, oh, like they can't actually do anything. Okay, so that, let's do a little exercise here. So here we had our wait for finished example earlier, where we wait for one thread to be finished. So here I'm going to say I'm going to wait for two threads to be finished, and they're identified by an index, which is 0 or 1. So the idea is I call wait for both finished, and that doesn't return until some two other threads have called finished with index 0 and finished with index 1. The first question is, what goes in this while loop? You mean it, you can discuss with your neighbors. So this is sort of the thing we're waiting for expressed some way when we're on that both finished list of waiting threads. Okay, I'd like some more time. Okay, so who thinks A? B? C? Okay, and D? And E. Okay, so we have consensus in this class, though we need to wait for the thing that is means we can't complete this method. So there's a common confusion, which I want to bring up explicitly, that people think, oh, we're waiting for both to be finished, so that should be the condition of my while loop. The while loop is when you don't get out of this method. So the condition we want is the opposite of that. We want both finished to be true, so the while loop should be exclamation point A, which is the same as C. Okay, so how about here? So in our finished method, we want to somehow, under some conditions, we want to wake up someone who called wait for both finished, who is we know is called clone wait. How do we do that? What is the way we should do that? Okay, who likes some more time? Okay, so who thinks A? Should ever be our best choice. Okay. Cool. B. Okay. C. Okay. D. Okay, so we have mostly a split between C and D. And something I didn't tell you is, well, how many threads can call wait for both finished? So if wait for both finished is something that a lot of threads can call, we just say as many threads as you want can wait for both to be finished, we better choose a solution that has a broadcast, or else one of the threads could be left waiting indefinitely. That calls wait for both finished. So without more information that there's some restriction on how often we call wait for both finished, I would say we want one of the solutions with broadcast, so that's B or D. And see, and I think D is probably the best way, because with D, we know that finished of index is true, because we just set it in the code that's above this blank. And finished of 1 minus index is the other element of finished, so we know that when the thread returns from con await, that it will find out finished, both parts of finished are true, and it will actually make progress. We could also do B. And in that case, what would happen is we'd wake up the thread from wait for both finished, it would find out, oh, only one of them is finished, and try waiting again. So we wouldn't get an incorrect answer, it would just be a bit slower. But I think D is probably the best solution, and C would be a fine solution if we somehow knew there was only one thread that ever called wait for both finished. Some questions about this exercise? Yes?
The difference between signal and broadcast is one wakes up one thread and the other one wakes up all.
Question, the difference between signal and broadcast is one wakes up one thread and one wakes up all? Yes. So signal wakes up one, broadcast wakes up all the ones that are waiting. Question, in this case, broadcast is better because it would wake up all of them? Yes. So if there's more than one waiting, probably they all should continue. They all should be done waiting and return from the wait for both finish method. Okay, so let's do a different exercise. So here, I'm going to talk about implementing a barrier. To keep things simple, it's going to be a single-use barrier. So yes, real barriers are multi-use. That's going to be would be a much more complicated. So this is just a single-use barrier. And the way this barrier works is we have a total number of threads that we expect to wait and the number that have actually called wait. And we increment that number when we reach this method. And then we have some logic. And the question is, what goes in that logic? And we're probably going to need some other thing to manage that logic. Give you a minute or two. In particular, we want threads that are to wait on the barrier to actually wait, so we probably want a condition variable of some sort somewhere. Okay, who would like some more time? Okay, so who can get me started? What should I add to the struct? Yes?
Conditional variable.
Okay, so we're going to have a condition variable. P thread con T. And what is this going to represent? So this condition variable, remember, is a list of waiting threads. What are these threads going to be waiting for? So waiting for total threads to be equal to reached. So that's the condition that all the threads that are on this list should be waiting for. Okay, so that's a good proposal. And that total threads equals sum reached, that's how barriers work, right? When all the threads reach the barrier, then they should stop waiting. So with that in mind, what should be in this first then part of this if statement? Any suggestions? So we have our condition variable. Yes?
Probably a broadcast on the
condition variable. Okay, so we're going to broadcast on the condition variable. And why is that? So we've changed that condition to be true that they were waiting for, so we should broadcast to let them actually run now that it's true. We decided, and that's the condition we're checking matches the condition we decided. Okay, so how about the else case? So what should go in there? Yes. So we have a wait, okay. So pthread cond wait, and what should the arguments be? We have a condition variable, so we only have one of those, and a lock. So bcv and block. Okay. Is that what you want? Okay. Any, someone has, yes?
Oh, you also need a while loop inside the else statement.
Yes, so we need a while loop. We need to worry about spurious wake-ups. So we must have a while loop. So what should the condition on the, what should be the while loop be about? Yes, or it could be a do while loop if we're being, because we've checked a condition beforehand, but we need some sort of loop. What should the condition of the while loop be? Someone preferably who hasn't gone yet. Everyone's too shy. Yeah. Yeah. Num reach not equal to total thread. So it's the, do we still need to wait? So this is going to be number reached not equal to total threads. And the way to think about this is it's while we still need to wait, wait. When do we need to wait? When our condition isn't true, which was, we decided was total threads equals reached. So questions? How we figured out this example? Yes?
Can we switch to less than or equal to?
Can we switch to less than or equal to? Yes. Or less than or equal to.
And why not strictly less?
We can switch to strictly less here if we want, rather. We can switch to strictly less. We can't switch to less than or equal. Other questions, comments? Some people look confused, so I was expecting more, but. Yeah.
So how often are barriers implemented using condition variables?
How often are barriers implemented using condition variables? So the Linux implementation of barriers uses a strategy similar to the mutexes we looked at, because that's gonna be more efficient than building something on top of that. But you know, it depends what tools you have and whether you want to deal with the low-level sort of stuff that, like, you know, spin locks deal with. let's do different variations. So let's, we had our producer-consumer example. And here we have a produce function, which adds one thing to a queue, and a consume function, which takes one thing from a queue. Let's say we want to make a consume two instead of consume, which is going to take a pair of items and return a pair of items. So what should we change to make that work? Give you a minute or two. Check with your neighbors, see if you agree on what things need to change here. I'll start with sort of zoom two. Question, yes? Okay, we're going to, yeah, we'll start with that in a second. So, first, do people want more time? Okay, I guess not. So, you're starting, so someone, first proposal is we need to change the while loop so it checks for what? So while buffer.size is less than 2. Okay. So we still need to wait if there's not 2 items. Okay. So there's definitely a few more things we need to change here. Can someone give me one of them? Yeah. Okay. So you could say we could add an if statement here, so if buffer.size is greater than or equal to 2, we could only call signal then. That is an option, yes. So notably, this we need to do for correctness, this is just an efficiency, right? Otherwise, we're just signaling too often, it's not going to be a big deal. Okay, other things that need to change? No one's giving me the obvious one. Yeah? Yes, we need to do the queue twice. So we need to have item one and item two equals the DQ and then return item one, item two. Okay. Any other changes? Okay, so I think this is my canonical solution. Okay. So, some questions on the note? Yes. When is this slide going to be uploaded? Yes. If you're asking, yes, I don't have the solution slides because I don't want people doing the exercises that way. Yeah?
Could you just explain the greater
than one? Why is this greater than one? So we know that if we wake up a thread when the buffer has one item, it can't make any progress. So I'm just choosing not to signal if that's the case. So if we wake up a thread here and the buffer size was 1, it's going to say, oh, the buffer size is 1, let's wait again. So I just save myself some time by not waking the thread up in that case. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we need to change the if statement and the while loop condition at the same time?
Question, do we need to change the if statement and the while loop condition at the same time? No. So if I remove this if statement, I still have a correct solution. It's just going to be slower. So I think having that if statement's most natural, because the way I think about signal and wait and broadcast is that we should have one thing we're checking for, and that thing is, does the buffer have at least two items? That should be sort of what we look for before every wait and signal and broadcast that uses that. So I would want to change them together just because of how I think about, you know, making sure I'm being consistent in how I use a condition variable, but it's not necessary because we can always signal in cases where we're just gonna wake up a thread and have it discover, oh, there's nothing to do. Other questions, follow-ups? Yeah. So question, is no condition variable actually needed here? Data ready is a condition variable.
Yeah, but it's not actually explicitly defined.
It's not actually explicitly defined. I have not included the definitions because they're the same as our previous examples. And they're also on the slide. Other questions? Okay. Okay, so let's do version here. So one thing that you might complain about with how our producer-consumer example works in just a normal case is that when I call consume, if I start waiting first before the other calls to consume, then that is absolutely no guarantee about when I will get to actually return, because that's just based on who wakes up first, right? Who gets the lock first? And we said that that's sort of arbitrary, right? So if I have a call to consume, I wait a second, another thread calls consume, wait a second, a third thread calls consume, and then one thread calls produce, well, they had three threads that were waiting, and we'll just choose arbitrarily which of those three threads gets to go next. So let's say I wanted to ensure that in that scenario, they went in order. So how could I, what could I change here to do that? I'm gonna look for a higher level solution. This is probably, typically this is not a trivial amount of code. So what's the high level, a high level strategy that would let us do this? Where we don't rely on the signal broadcast order. But basically, the thread that starts waiting first should be the one that gets to consume first. Yes, question? Comment? So you have a high level idea? So what's the high level idea you're thinking of? So you're thinking of pthread create and join. So the, what would the ordering analogous to pthread create and join in that, like, you're passing a value to a specific thread? Or
consume would be like what you create the thread for.
So you want to create a new thread.
Yeah.
Is your thing. So I would say that we shouldn't need to create a new thread here, because there are good solutions that don't involve doing that. I think you're thinking of, oh, but we want to have a list of threads, and that is a good idea. So how can we have a list of threads? Right? Because that's essentially what we want here. I want to have a list of threads and take the first one on the list. How can I do that with mutexes and condition variables? A vector? Okay, so we have a good question. Yeah, comment there, yeah. So our list of threads could be the condition variables. Yes, so that is, so we could have, to represent a thread, well, a condition variable is a list of threads. If we want to have identify one thread that's waiting for something. It can be a thread that's waiting on a particular condition variable. So the typical strategy you use for something like this with condition variables is you could have a separate condition variable that each thread is waiting on. And basically, in that case, each condition variable is kind of like a pointer to the thread. Just so it gets back to the idea of I can join a particular thread. Why can't I, signal a particular thread? Well, if you want to do that, just make sure that thread is the only thing waiting on one condition variable. So I'm not going to say this is the only solution, but the solution I would come up with is let's have a vector or something like that, or Q, more likely, of condition variables. And when a thread wants to start waiting, it makes a new condition variable, adds it to the queue, waits on it. Now, there's something we have to take care of with this is that, remember, when we call con wait, we need to have this while loop, right? We need to wait for something. So what can we be waiting for? Yes? So the question is, so iterate, wait for the last condition variable to be done. So the problem is that we don't have any way of knowing is a condition variable done from a condition variable itself, right? Our condition variable functions are wait, signal, and broadcast. There's no what's the status of this condition variable function. Even though, yes, that might be convenient. So how can we simulate that sort of? So how about we look back at something we did earlier? So here, if I wanted to track if we got somewhere, I just set a flag, a boolean. We can use that same sort of strategy to query, is the condition variable, has it been signaled yet? By just recording in a boolean if we've signaled a thread. So the solution I get, there's many possible solutions. So the solution I would come up with, so what I've done here is I have a list of information about a thread that's waiting. And what I've decided to do is I have a condition variable so we can signal a thread, right? This is a way to signal the thread. I have a boolean, so we have something to wait for, right? Remember, we need that while loop. So while we're not done, I'm going to wait. And that's how I'm going to handle spurious wakeups. So that done flag won't be set until someone decides to signal me. So we'll have this convention that done will start as false. When I'm ready to go, they'll set done to true and signal me. And I'll know that it was a genuine signal and not some fluke from spurious wakeups because done is true. And in this case, I've decided that in this implementation, so there's multiple ways we could pass the item back. In this case, I wanted to be very careful about giving the next item to the first waiting thread, not just waiting them wake up earlier. So I decided I would pass the item to the thread there. So just directly. If we didn't do this, things get actually, I think, more complicated. But so what I've done here is when we are waking up a thread that's waiting, we just send the item to it rather than having it to queue. Yeah, question.
Where are you actually setting done to be true?
Where am I setting done to be true? Right here. So, produce and consumer called by code that's not seen here. Yeah, question back there?
Yeah, it's unclear to me, like, how this works with, like, say you're writing threads in the final, and everyone gets to the barrier, and then, like, you're ready, like, how this exactly does the first one.
How does this do the first one? So, it's the first one that starts waiting.
Right, so, like, the first thread that reaches barrier.
I wouldn't, this isn't a barrier. The first thread that reaches something where it gives up the lock. How does it tie to this specific thread? So this list of waiters has a specific item for that thread. So we're going to dequeue from the list of waiters an entry that was created by that specific thread. Does that answer your question? Yes. Isn't a monitor supposed to have a lock? Yes. Sorry, I haven't written everything else. I haven't written everything that is here. So we have a lock. We have the lock and the buffer that we had before. I just didn't write the declaration of it. Yes?
So when when call consume and not empty, you buffer that continue, how does that fit into the solution of the next?
So question, when I call consume and it's not empty, I call buffer.dequeue, how does that satisfy our property that the first thread that goes gets to wait? So if you don't have to wait, you just get what's there.
Okay. Oh yeah, it's not.
So there's no.
Consume.
Yeah. So we only care about the situation where you have to wait. In which case, we want it to have an order. So what would go wrong here if I decided to not pass the item here? So if I could do that, but this requires more changes to the solution than is obvious. So there's something where if I just, instead of you doing item equals waiter at item DQ, where I can run into trouble. What would the problem be? And it has to do with what if there's lots of threads calling consume? Yeah. Sorry? So we need some way to uniquely identify each one. Why?
Because it's defined by what you're returning. And if they are returning the same thing, then you might not be able to return
it.
How to identify
each one? So I guess there's a bigger problem. So it's not like, so there's a problem which is not just like they'll return the items in the wrong order. It's that we'll have threads that try to, if we replace this, so if instead of passing the item here, if we enqueued it and dequeued it, we'd run into a problem where we dequeue from an empty buffer sometimes. Someone explain why that would happen. So if instead of passing the item here, if we enqueued it and dequeued it, we sometimes dequeue from an empty buffer. So why would that happen? Someone who hasn't spoken would be preferable, but we'll... So, yeah?
Is it because during the end, it checks that it is empty, but later on it ends up becoming empty because you dequeue it? So if I define that in my statement, it's actually empty.
So the question is, during the if, we check it isn't empty, but we dequeue later?
Yeah.
So that's one way of thinking about it. So the reason why you might think, okay, a solution might be, let's keep the item in the buffer, but you might say, okay, so if we replace this with DQ and this here with NQ, it seems like, oh, we should DQ what was NQ. But what could happen instead is I could call consume, wait, then another thread can call consume, Let me actually do this in a better way here. So I can call consume and wait. And then a thread can call produce and wake up and enqueue. So this would enqueue plus wake up. And as I wake up, there could be a third thread that calls consume and takes the item that was just enqueued. And this is related to that problem we talked about earlier with Mesa-style scheduling, where when you signal, it doesn't hand off the lock, right? We could still have someone else get the lock first, and that's where we could get into trouble. So if we just try to enqueue and dequeue, we could run into this problem where we end up enqueuing something that a thread reads because it checked, because another thread calls consume and says, oh, the buffer's not empty, I'm going to take that. Because it doesn't know it's meant for a different thread. Right, so I avoided that when the item was meant for a specific thread, I put it in a struct for that thread. There's other ways I could have accounted, like I could like have a counter of how many items are reserved for specific threads, and then check that instead of buffered on empty. Yes, back there. Question, wouldn't this be solved by the lock? So the problem is that our produce is going to give up the lock here. And the system can give the lock to either of the two consume functions. And there's nothing preventing it from choosing the wrong one. Does that answer your question about why it's not solved by the lock? Okay, other questions? Yeah. So is this similar to the thread pool? Yes. This is not quite what the implementation strategy. This is related, but not quite what the implementation strategy will look like. Yes.
Not just like exactly, but the concept of having a vector like condition variables and like you like iterate.
So the concept of having multiple condition variables is something I want you to be familiar with for the pool assignment, because I think it is the best, but not the only solution. Okay, so in our remaining time, we're going to talk about a different way of generalizing locks. So we talked about mutexes and condition variables, which let us write code that waits for any sort of condition and do all sorts of synchronization. You saw with this sort of example of like using extra condition variables, if you generalize in this sort of way, it can be very flexible. So for example here, I could have easily extended this to like run the consume calls in a specific order based on like a number or some other criterion, because I'm just choosing one from a list and I can write whatever logic I want for that. So there's another popular synchronization construct that's nearly as general called semaphores. So a semaphore is a thing that has a non-negative integer value, so 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on, and there's two operations on it. There's an operation which is called P, or down, or wait, an operation that's called V, or up, or signal, or post. The down operation waits for the semaphore to become positive and then decrements it. So this is a wait and decrement. So wait for it to be positive, because we can't let it be negative, and decrement as long as it won't become negative. And the up operation increments it, and that can wake up a waiting thread. Exactly one waiting thread. The P and V is something you'll see. They're from Dutch, because this was proposed by Dijkstra. Okay, so a semaphore holds an integer, but it has these operations. Notably, you cannot read or write a semaphore directly. So you're going to look at some actual like APIs for semaphores. Sometimes they'll have a read or write operation. You should consider that debugging only. There is essentially no safe way to use it other than for debugging. There's one exception where we'll write a semaphore, which is when we're initializing it, we'll set the initial value. We'll get to choose that, and that will be useful. And also, semaphores are never negative. So So the down operation tries to decrement it, and if it can't, it just waits until it can. Yes?
Is there a reason why the
creator decided not to use negative values? We'll have some nice analogies to what semaphores are tracking, which will make it, I think, clear. So let's think of reserving books. So let's say I have a library which has three copies of a book. We can track that, how many free copies there are, with a semaphore whose value is the number of copies. And this sort of usage of a semaphore gives us a natural motivation for the non-negative constraint, right? We can't have a negative number of copies of a book. We either have zero or some non-zero number. And our reserve operation is going to decrement the number of free copies because one of them is going to be reserved. So we do the down operation. And it does exactly what we want as far as waiting when a copy isn't available. It's going to wait for someone to return a copy, increasing the number of free copies. So this up operation, for returning a book, it increases the number of free copies. We increment it by one. We do that with our semaphore. And now that increment wakes up someone who was trying to reserve a book and lets them finish that reserve operation. So we can think of, you know, how the semaphore works. So if I take out a book, I call down to reserve. Free copies goes from 3 to 2. There's no waiting involved. It's still positive. And I can keep doing that, have all the copies taken out. My semaphore value is 0. So there's no waiting yet. Then if someone tries to reserve a book, they call down. And down is not going to complete, it's just going to wait. It's going to say it's 0. I can't decrement it until it's positive again. And when someone returns a book, we're going to kind of match that to the reserve a book call and make that corresponding down call stop waiting. And the semaphore value is still going to be 0 because we have sort of a down and up which cancel out. So questions? Yes? Does this waiter have an order? So like with locks we've seen and condition variables, you could have an implementation which has an order, but it's, most of the ones we'll look at do not guarantee that. And if you want to have a specific order, you'll need to use a strategy like what we saw with that queue of condition variables, if you care very specifically about which one happens when. Other questions? Yes? Why is it that we can't read and write directly? So the primary reason is that there's no way of knowing that if you read the value, that it didn't change. So we're not going to provide that API because there's nobody who can provide that API which is useful. Right, you can get the value of the if you got the value of the semaphore and then try to use it, there is no way to know that it didn't change in between those two things. So that's why I say even if you have an interface to read the value of a semaphore, it's not useful. Because, you know, except for things like debugging, you're not going to have an assurance that something else won't change the value of the semaphore by the time you would try to use it. Try to use that value you just read from it. Okay, so semaphores, these seem kind of weird compared to our locks and condition variables, and they're in fact as powerful as locks and condition variables. So let's start by showing why they can implement locks. So to implement a mutex with semaphores, we have a semaphore whose initial value is going to be 1. So we have like a book, and my lock operation is I reserve the book, so no one else can have it, and my unlock operation is I return the book so someone else can take it. And that works exactly like we want a lock to work. Only one thread can have the book at a time, just like how locks are supposed to work. Only one thread can have the lock at a time. A thread that wants the lock and doesn't have it needs to wait. Some questions? Yes. So semaphores handle locking, and they also handle waiting for events. So our first example of like waiting for event was like waiting for something to finish. So let's say we wanted to implement like thread join and thread exit. So we can do that with a semaphore, which is initially zero. In this case, to join the thread, I call down on the semaphore, trying to decrement it. And to exit the thread, I call up, telling someone who's joined me that they can finish. So this achieves that waiting operation because the join operation can't complete until the exit operation increments the semaphore. So this way, semaphores let us implement a wait for operation in addition to locking patterns. We'll look at some more examples later. Yes? So the question is, why is the exit that's incrementing? So the up operation is what stops someone from waiting. So if you want to stop someone from waiting for something, you should be using up. If you want to wait for something, you should be using down. And that's sort of how I would look at this problem and say, which operation should I be using in join versus exit? Exit needs to stop someone waiting, join needs to start waiting. Yes? Because that's the value?
Yes. But what?
So question, do we not need a while loop or anything like that? So unlike our conditioned variables, there's nothing like spurious wakeups for semaphores. So in that sense, they are much nicer. And the reason why you can think of it is that internally, like a way you could implement a semaphore is you could have that value and you'd have it like your while the value is zero wait, right? That you could implement it handling all that automatically, which is not so easy for conditional variables. Other questions? Yeah. Question, what if the value is initially set to 1? So if we set the initial value wrong, then join will always return immediately, and thread exit will increment a semaphore which will not do anything. Because no one's gonna wait based on that increment happening. So yes, and it's very important we set the correct initial value. Because our semaphores behave very differently depending on that. So I've sort of shown an abstract API for semaphores. POSIX has semaphores, and if you were trying to use the pattern of what we've seen so far, I'm afraid we've just broken it because it's no longer a pthread. So the semaphores in POSIX are declared in semaphore.h, and the type is semt. There's an seminit function, which takes the initial value of the semaphore, that integer. We saw 0 and 1 so far. We saw 3 with our books example. It also takes this Boolean about whether the semaphore might be shared between multiple processes. So right now, that might seem kind of weird because we can't share memory between different processes, but there's ways of doing that. And if you do that, you have to say explicitly that the semaphore is being shared between multiple processes or it might not work. And then we have our down operation, which POSIX uses the name wait for, and our upper operation, POSIX uses the name post for. Questions on API? Okay, so let's do a little exercise. So I have a function here, put value and get value. And I have some initial semaphores, some semaphores here, two of them, and put value waits on the semaphore we call empty, inserts a value and posts the semaphore we call ready. And get value should wait for a put value to happen. So that's going to be the purpose of something of near. And then retrieve the value, and then it should allow the next put value. Meaning that put value, if a get value is in progress, should wait for the get value to complete before it proceeds. So the idea is that, you know, put value gets the current, puts a value that it waits for get value to retrieve, and then they can both return. And then we have another pair of these operations. So my question is, to implement this strategy, what should I put in the blanks? And remember, our wait operation, our down operation, is the thing which can wait. Our up operation is the thing which can let something that is waiting stop waiting. It's sort of our equivalent of signaling. Are you ready to check with your neighbor? Agree? And another thing to think about, which is probably a question we should also ask, is what should the initial values of empty and ready be? So the way I would think about this trouble is, first I would say, what does this do? Does it wait or does it signal something? And if it does that, where should the corresponding signal or wait operation be in get value? Who'd like some more time? Okay, who thinks A? Okay. B? Okay, C? D? E? F? Okay, so we have, I think, B, was it? We have B as the sort of consensus answer. So, that is semwait ready. Ready and post on empty. So if we think of how this works, this wait here in put value waits for some call to get value to have completed. So to make that happen, we need to post on empty when get value is done. That satisfied the property that if get value is in progress, put value doesn't proceed. If it's not, put value can just go. And this wait on ready here waits for a put value call to have succeeded, to have incremented the counter here. So questions on that? So another way of thinking about this is that, well, actually, let's start with go to question of what should the initial value of empty be? The semaphore empty. So who thinks zero? Empty should be initially zero. Okay, who thinks one? Okay, so most people say one. Anyone want to justify the answer of one? Yeah, there.
The first thing you want.
So your logic is, oh, I should be able to put a value right away, and I should be able to just put one value, so I'm gonna set it to one. If I set it to zero, I'm saying you can't put a value right away, because the wait there is gonna stop that. Yeah, so another way we can think about this is empty is the number of empty slots for values, which is typically one, and ready is the number of full slots for values, which is typically zero or one. So these are all both zero or one, but they're counting something, right? They're counting how many slots of our one slot is full, which is something we're gonna extend. We're gonna look at how we can do producer-consumer with semaphores. Okay, so questions, example. So I should probably rate our initial values are one, and for ready, we probably want an initial value of zero. We want wait, and the wait in get value to wait before there's any puts. Okay. So when I'm thinking about semaphores generally, I try to think about what do I need to wait for. So the thing of mutex, I need to wait for a critical section to be finished, or like a queue to be not empty. We have a slot free. And I think about what can I count that will be zero when I need to wait. So I think of something I can count. So the number of threads that can start the critical section, that's our mutex implementation. So we said initially one thread can start, can get the lock, and then we decrement how many threads can get the lock when we get the lock. So that's what I'm tracking there if I think of that mutex. The number of items we have slots for. You know, if it's zero, I can't put an item in a slot. So that's how I wait for that. Number of items that are ready. If it's zero, I can't get an item. So, but the way I would think about it is think of what you need to wait for and think of a way of counting things such that you get a count of zero when you need to wait. And that's the count you should track in the semaphore, and just think of when do I change this? When do I change how many items are in we have in our slot and increment and decrement accordingly. Yes. Pressing the positive integer value is the, would it be the number of threads? So it depends what we're using it for, right? These are example uses. So with our mutexes, it's the number of threads that can start the critical section, right? That mutex implementation, we said we start at one. When we lock, we decrement it. So zero threads can start a critical section. When we unlock, we increment it. So one thread can. So we're really tracking the number of threads that can start a critical section. How do we determine that number? Well, I know initially what the number is. I know when I start the program, any thread can start that critical section with that lock, so it's initially one. And I know when I lock, it goes down to zero. And then when I unlock, it goes back up to one. And that's the sort of reason I say is like, what's the state when this program starts, and what changes it? Just make sure the things that change it update the semaphore. And similarly with our like joining example, you know, initially no threads can join without waiting, so the initial counter is zero. And when it finishes, one thread can. Okay. So let's look at how we do producer-consumer with semaphores. And to think about this with semaphores, I'm gonna write out the things I need to wait for. So the consumer waits for producers if the buffer is empty. So what's the thing I'm gonna count for this? Well, I'm gonna have a sum for each of these constraints. The thing I'm gonna count for if the buffer is empty is sort of the number of things in the buffer. The producer waits for consumers if the buffer is full. So what am I gonna count for this? I want something that's zero when we need to wait, so I'm gonna count the number of slots free in the buffer. because this is going to be zero when we need to wait. So I'm counting things that are going to be zero when I want to wait for each of those conditions. So with condition variables, we just like write down the condition and have a while loop based on it. For semaphores, I write down my conditions and I say, what's something that's zero when this is something I need to wait for? And we also need to have any thread wait while it's manipulating the buffer. So this is going to be a mutex. Sort of this is the, you know, number of threads that can manipulate the buffer now. Initially one, it's going to be zero when anyone is taking a chance with the buffer. So questions? Sort of about how I decided what semaphores we have. So we have our number of slots that are occupied in the buffer, number of slots that are free in the buffer, the slots that are occupied, the consumers are going to wait with, slots that are free, that are empty, the producers are going to wait with, and a mutex to make sure that we don't manipulate the queue from two threads at once. So here's my sort of implementation. So initially, I have no slots occupied. I have all the slots empty. So I have my empty slot semaphore initialized to my capacity. And I have a mutex, which is one. The number of threads that can access the buffer initially is one. It's going to be zero once one, zero additional threads can once one starts doing so. And so then the logic I get is the producer waits for an empty slot, and by waiting for it, it reserves that empty slot. Remember, we're decrementing a counter of how many slots are available, so we've accounted for the slot being occupied. When it gets a slot, it enqueues in the buffer using the mutex to prevent us from being confused about where in the buffer to write to. And then it says to the consumers that, oh, now there's a slot that's full, not just reserved. So you can use that. So we use post, the up operation, to wake up a consume. On the consume side, we wait until there's something full slot in the buffer. We take dequeue that slot. And then we say, now we can say, oh, now there's something that a producer can use, and we increment the number of slots a producer can use. So questions? Yes? The reason we have two waits is one is to wait for the item, and the other is to make sure it's locked. Yes. So one is the is there an item available? The other part is make sure we don't simultaneously access the array and like have disagreement about which index we're accessing and so on. Or however else the buffer is implemented. It might be a linked list or whatever. Yes?
So if we switch the order, then it would become significantly more efficient.
So question, if we switch the order, like that? So what would happen if we did this? Anyone? Deadlock. So we haven't talked about what deadlock is. So what do you mean by that? So you think it will wait forever. So what's going to cause it to wait forever? So someone back up? Yeah, so because the lock is exclusive, once we get the lock, there's no way that the consumer can get the lock. And the reason that's a problem is that we're waiting on the consumer to make the SEMPOST call. And we can stop them from making that call by having the mutex, even though, you know, from a perspective of full slots, they're fine. Right, so once we acquire the mutex here, you know, then that post empty slots can't happen anymore. So if the empty slots wasn't already reserved for us, it's never gonna come after that. Okay. Yes, question?
Is this the same deadlock as in
Comp Arc? I'm not sure what you're referring to. Other questions? Yes. Right, and I have the fully worked out version there. So how about a different question? Can I swap the order of these two statements, of the post to the mutex and the post to full slots? Why don't you, in 30 seconds, see what the customer or neighbor do you think, can we swap these? Is it possible to instead do post to full and post to mutex? So who thinks, yes, yes, it's possible to do that? Who thinks, no, no, it's not possible? Okay. Who thinks, has no idea? Okay, some people. So remember, the problem we had before was, what if, you know, someone was waiting, you know, we were waiting for someone to, like, do something, and they would not be able to make progress. So here, it won't matter. And the reason why is that the post never waits. So the only thing we need to be concerned about is whether releasing the mutex at a different time is going to allow someone else to, like, access the buffer at the same time. But that's also not true, right? So this order doesn't matter because these are both things that never wait for anything. So we don't have to worry about stalling a thread, and because it's not going to make us actually access the buffer from two different threads at the same time or anything else that's shared at the same time. So that is actually fine. Next, questions about our producer-consumer code. Okay, so that's producer-consumer. And one thing you might say is, gosh, it seems like semaphores are kind of inflexible if we have things that aren't, like, fixed size buffers. So there's this common pattern you'll see in semaphore using code, which I'll call this gate pattern. We have a gate which is either closed or open. So the gate number is, like, how many things can go through the gate. And a common pattern is we'll have some data which tracks if another thread is waiting, like a counter, for example, and we'll post on a gate to allow a thread to go through the gate and wait, have that thread wait. And using this sort of pattern, this condition here, this can be, you know, can be based on counters, or we could have a separate gate for each thread. You know, we could have one per thread, like our queue example earlier, with condition variables. We can do the same strategy with semaphores. We can have, like, one semaphore per thread in the list. So because of that, yes, you can do everything that we saw with condition variables with semaphores, but sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a more natural fit for semaphores, sometimes it's a more natural fit for condition variables. Okay, and before concluding on this, I'll mention what Anderson Dahlin, our recommended textbook, says about semaphores. And they say, our view is that programming with locks and condition variables is superior to programming with semaphores. So they don't like semaphores. Now, semaphores are widely, you know, implemented and used, they're really old. Their arguments, and I'm not going to say they're right or wrong, is that they like better having separate constructs for waiting versus locking. They don't think it's nice. Like, you can say it's really elegant that semaphores is one thing for waiting and locking. They don't think so. They think it's confusing. And they think it's trickier to verify if semaphore code is correct because even though with condition variables you have all that stuff with, like, making sure the while loops are there, with semaphore code you have to make sure you have exactly matched the up and down operations, which they think is tricky. I think it's debatable because there's all these sort of issues with condition variables and like that while loop and so on. Okay, so that's where I'll finish today. So next time we'll talk about reader-writer locks, and after the break we'll talk about reader-writer locks and deadlock. So see you in a couple weeks.